Bibles tonight, please, to the Revelation, book of Revelation, chapter 17 and verse 1. I'm continuing our lessons on the church. I'm speaking tonight on the Catholic influence on Baptist churches and how it got there. Another one of my subtle discussions. In the first verse of the 17th chapter of Revelation, what I'm going to do is we've studied a little bit already. I'm going to have just a brief study on the 17th and 18th chapters of Revelation, and then I'm going to sort of bundle it together and give you some things I think will be helpful to you. May I say before I do this, I have a great respect and admiration for many people that are wrong on the church. I'm mad at Baptist people because we have lost our esprit de corps and our loyalty to our Baptist heritage. I don't blame people that never had the privilege of being in a Baptist members of a Baptist church. One of the greatest preachers that ever lived was Dwight L. Moody, but Dwight L. Moody never belonged to a New Testament church. Billy Sunday was perhaps the greatest evangelist that ever lived, but Billy Sunday never had the privilege of belonging to a New Testament church. So I'm not trying to cast anybody to the outer darkness or the lake of fire because they're not Baptist. I just sort of have the feeling that those of us who are Baptist, though, ought to have a loyalty to our forefathers who died for the convictions and so forth. And I also think, I'm gonna say this, I also think that a bunch of good Baptist churches can beat a non-Baptist evangelist as far as lasting work is concerned. You've got to have some place to channel these converts. And on that, you're better off if you have some place to have converts every week, like evangelists have them once a year. So I'm making very strong my position on the fact that this is a Baptist church. But I'm not at all casting any reflection upon anybody. Some wonderful people have never had the privilege of knowing the great heritage of belonging to a Baptist church. All right, look in verse 1 of Revelation 17. And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that setteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold. Doesn't sound like a Baptist preacher, does it? And precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was written, a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and the 10 horns. Now, Holy Father, help us to do justice to this wonderful book tonight, and also to the wonderful institution that Jesus died for. Bless us as we study. Help us to hunger and thirst after righteousness. Amen. Yesterday at noon, I had lunch with a group of preachers in Orlando, Florida, and they asked me at the end of the luncheon if I would stand and speak on what I had predicted for fundamentalism in the next decade. That was a very unusual request, and I did. And I guess for almost an hour, I spoke about 30 minutes, I imagine, or the 20, and they asked questions for the rest of the time, almost an hour. I talked on what I predict is going to come in the next decade in fundamentalism. Among the things that I said is I'm predicting, and I'm predicting it not only because of the emphasis around the country, but because of the emphasis I plan to give, and I hope to get a book out on the church sometime in the next decade And I predicted that there will be a resurgence of Baptist pride. And I don't mean wrong pride. I mean not pride in ourselves, but pride in our heritage. I predicted a resurgence of Baptist fundamentalism over non-denominational fundamentalism. And I'm not criticizing non-denominational fundamentalism tonight. I'm simply saying I think it's a matter of good, better, and best. And so it's not a matter of good and bad. It's a matter of good, better, and best. But I'm predicting, and I do believe it, I believe we'll see a resurgence. Now, you know, the sad thing is that the Catholics have had an unbelievable influence on our Baptist churches. Tonight I'm going to show you what influence they've had. And I'm going to take you step by step in a little place, area you've never seen, and show you exactly how that influence took place. But I want to study just for a few minutes the 17th and 18th chapters of Revelation. So let's look at them. We'll rush right through. Verse 1, 17. There came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying, "Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore." I'm going to stop there to say that any time you have in the Bible, or most of the time, a bad woman is mentioned in the Bible, especially metaphorically, it has to do with false religion. Any time you have a symbol in the Bible of a bad woman, it's false religion, just like a symbol of a good woman symbolizes the true faith in Jesus Christ. So we have here, and you'll find it later on, but we have here an introduction to a false religion called the Great Whore. I want you to notice after it says the word whore, that sitteth upon many waters. By the way, those of you who are new here, I ask you not to take notes. The reason is I can teach you more to your mind than I can to your notebook. I really can. So just put your pens and pencils up. Don't take notes. I guarantee you, you'll learn more listening carefully than you'll ever learn taking notes, because your mind is on two things at one time. Now, I'm not guessing that. I'm not, oh, mind you're writing, and sometimes I ask you to write. But I want you to follow me very carefully now. All right? The great whore is false religion. Now it says that sitteth upon many waters. Now, that word many waters means many nations of the earth. In the Bible, so often, the earth is a symbol of the Jewish people, and waters are symbolic of Gentile nations. Now you say, "Well, I'll prove it." All right, since you ask me, I will. Look at verse 15, you'll have it explained. "And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest," that's the waters that we just read about in verse 1, "where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." All right? Now, it says this whore here sitteth on many waters. That means she's a universal whore. Is that right? All right? Which means that whatever her religion is a universal religion sitting on, it says in verse 15, a peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. Look at verse 2. "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication." Look at me. That means that this woman has joined herself up with the kings of the earth. What they're talking about? He's talking about a union of church and state. I'll get to that in a few minutes. When you got this great whore, who is a false religion, who is a universal false religion, and she also has a union of church and state. It says she's committed fornication with the kings of the earth. Now, I want to say a word about fornication. The word fornication here, it has to do with the word whore. It means a unholy relationship without love. That's what it means. So this religion does not love the state, but for her own gain, it makes love to the state, if you don't mind. And the state the same way. The state, for her own gain, interacts with this religion. All right? Look at verse number 2 again. "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast." All right, look at me. The woman is the great whore. She is false religion, a universal false religion, a universal false religion that is united with church and state. And it says here, she's sitting on the beast. Now, There are two beasts in Revelation chapter 13, also chapter 17 and 18. One beast is a political beast, and the other beast is an ecclesiastical beast. The political beast is head of what we would call something like the United Nations, and the ecclesiastical beast is head of something like we would call the World Council of Churches, and so forth. So this woman, this false religion, is sitting upon this beast. So once again, she rides upon him, which means that they are united. There is a union of church and state. All right? Full of names of blasphemy, verse 3, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Look at me again. In Daniel chapter 2, we have a picture of a big image or a big beast. That beast has a head that's of gold, breast and arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, legs of brass, and feet and toes of iron, and feet and toes of iron and clay. Now, those four metals, the gold, the silver, the brass, and the iron, represent four empires that have conquered the world. That's over in Daniel chapter 2. I'm telling you, I can read it to you word for word, almost like I'm saying it. And the first empire was the Babylon Empire, and the second world empire was the Empire of the Medes and Persians, conquered by the Grecian Empire, conquered by the Roman Empire, and that goes down to the legs of iron. But there is yet a world empire that has not come, and that is the 10 toes of iron and clay. The Bible says that there will be another world empire, and will have 10 toes, and those toes represent 10 kings. It'll be a revival of the Roman Empire. There will be 10 kings in that empire, and they will be the United Nations, if you please. It'll be actually the Western Confederacy over which the Antichrist will have control. All right, let's go on further now in verse number 4. And the woman, that's the religion, the universal religion, was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You'll find something like that in chapter 18 and verse 12, talking about the same woman. Look at it. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and of iron and of marble and cinnamon, and odors, and ointments, and frankincense, and wine, and oil, and fine flour, and wheat, and beast, and sheep, and horses, and chariots, and slaves, and the souls of men. Now then, here is this woman. Look at verse 3 of chapter 18. For all nations have drunk of the wine and wrath of fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And the word delicacies there means arrogant luxuries. Arrogant luxuries. All right, look at me. We have here a false religion that is universal, that is very, very wealthy, that believes in the union of church and state, that has an arrogant luxury, has all these different kinds of things in her religion, and so forth. Now, I'm going to stop right there. I'm not going to go home yet, but I'm going to stop right there because I don't want to belabor this 17th and 18th chapter of Revelation. I'm going to review it. Now, set it straight, look right this way, and I'm going to tell you some things you ought to know. Now, there are several things that we notice about this woman. This woman is false religion. Now, I'll make it very plain. She is the Roman Catholic hierarchy. She is the mother of harlots, Roman Catholicism, when all the little children have come back to her and united once again into one great false religion. And the Roman Catholic Church will sit on the 10 kingdom empire, and the Catholic Church and the National Council of Churches and the United Nations, or the Revived Roman Empire, or the European Common Market, whichever we want to call it, will be together in the end time, and all of the major religions of this world will be together, and all the major Western nations of this world will be together, and they'll line up against Russia, and we don't have time for all that. But I want you to notice several things about her. In the first place, she was a universal church. Now, the word Catholic means, look at me now, the word Catholic means universal. Look, Get an jealous look on your face or go home, would you please? I'm a little tired looking at a few unconcerned faces here. And I'd be shocked if 1,000 folks walked out when I said that, wouldn't I? But anyway, I was preaching out in California tonight, on a Monday night, and I said to the people, I said, I want you to come back tomorrow night. I said, the honest truth is, I would rather you hear the sermon tomorrow night than the one tonight. So if you have a choice in the matter, choose the one tomorrow night instead of the one tonight. Until I got up, walked out, so I'll see you tomorrow night. And I never came back, by the way, till the next night. So all right now, the Roman Catholic Church means universal. Up until this century, follow me carefully, up until this century, you couldn't have found a Baptist that believed in the invisible church. Honestly, I'll guarantee you that most Baptist preachers tonight believe in the local church and what they call the universal or invisible, or Mr. Scofield wrongly calls the true church. Now, you couldn't find that up to this century. It is unique to this century, a phenomenon of this century, for Baptist preachers to believe that there is such a thing, there is not, of course, as the universal invisible church. Baptist doctrine, all the way back to the Anabaptist days, that's our ancestors, all back to the Anabaptist days. Baptist people have always believed in just the local New Testament church, the called out assembly, if you please. Now, there's something else that this woman of harlots, we studied about, read about a while ago, possesses. And that is, she possesses formalism in her worship. Formalism in her worship. Now then, for example, Roman Catholicism has always been for a robed clergy, a robed preacher. Roman Catholicism has always been for a robed choir. Now, listen carefully. I'm going to make you mad in a few minutes, and I want you to be intelligent about it. And so Roman Catholicism has always believed in a robed choir. Up until this century, you wouldn't find a Baptist church had a robed choir. For 1900 years, Baptist churches didn't have robed choirs. You know why? Because Roman churches did. That's one reason we don't. I don't want anything in this church to remind you of a Catholic church. Anything at all. That's why I throw keys. Catholic priests do not throw keys at Mass. That's why I would never wear a robe. I mentioned it at the college, like Roberto Shuler does. I would never do that. But I'm saying, history. I'm talking about history. Up until this century, hear me now, up until this century, using robes was unheard of in a Baptist church. It is unique to this century. Not only that, worship centers. I'm talking about, you'd be shocked how many Baptist churches I go to preach in that have a communion table right here and have three candles there on the communion table. And those candles, up until this century, Baptists couldn't afford candles. We couldn't afford a table. And we weren't smart enough to know what the word candelabra meant. Now, we thought that was a pitcher in the National Baseball League. Anyway, you baseball players will know what I'm talking about. The rest of you can just be dumb. But anyway, I'm saying that was unheard of. Listen, the things that Baptist churches are taking for granted across America today were unheard of in Baptist churches 100 years ago and all the way back to the New Testament time. That isn't all. The fact that the church is called the house of God is unique to this century. Baptist churches never called a building a house of God. Spurgeon still used the word meeting place. That's the word he used. And it was called a meeting place. Now, Spurgeon was not much before this century, and Spurgeon used the word meeting place. He didn't call his building the house of God. Baptists did not use the term sanctuary until this century. It was unique. The word sanctuary, by Baptist, the word sanctuary simply means a house for God, a place for God. In Exodus 25 and verse 8, when God instructed Moses to build the tabernacle, he said, build for me a sanctuary, a place for me to live with you. Now, Baptist people would never have sung under this century, the Lord is in his holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before him. Baptist folks did not believe that. It is unique to this century that Baptist people have believed that a building is the house of God. Unless you mean by that God owns the house, he belongs to him. But a dwelling place for God? No. We meet God here? No. That's unique to this century in Baptist churches. Don't leave me now. After a while I'm gonna tell you something that's gonna upset you. Now I don't want you to miss it. Something else. Up until this century, you would never have heard a classical number in a Baptist church. You would never have heard an anthem in a Baptist church up to this century. Now, Baptist people historically have not been people of wealth and means and what the world calls, wrongly calls, culture and refinement. The worldly culture and refinement is a term that's been coined by people who think they're cultured and refined because they're ignorant in different subjects, which we're ignorant. And I'm saying that Baptist people would never have used an anthem up till this century. It's unique to this generation. It's this century. And using classical music in a church is unique to this century for Baptist churches. That isn't all. Ornate buildings are unique to this generation for Baptist churches. This building is not ornate. It's comfortable, but it's not ornate. And Baptist churches have never, until this century, had ornate buildings. I dare you to travel around the world and find the old Baptist churches. You can go to Paris and see the Notre Dame Cathedral. You can go to Rome and see St. Peter's Basilica. But I dare you to find the cathedrals that Baptists had built. But the next century will be able to do so. You see what I'm saying? So it's unique to this century. I'm going to tell you why in a minute. It's unique to this century. Baptist preachers until this century have never cared for clergy titles like reverend. It's unique to this century. The term reverend is totally unique to this century. Let's go a step further. The union of church and state. A Baptist church or Baptist school being licensed or accredited is totally unique to this age. Let me give you another thing. Catechism. When a person wants to join a church, the Catholics and others have catechism classes, and you've got to pass some tests before you can join the church. Now, the thing has gotten into Baptist churches. Their Baptist church, when I came to this church, before you could join this church, you had to meet before a committee. And that committee had to examine you, and you had to make a speech before that committee and convince them you were saved. I had some doubts about all the committee being saved, but you had to convince them. And so, I never forget it. When I came here, Jim Lyons was my associate pastor in Texas, came with me. And Jim said, "Preacher, what you going to do about that? You've always baptized your converts same day they got saved. What you going to do?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "That's not like you, preacher, to do nothing about stuff like that. I'm worried about you. You come north, you're changing now." I said, "You just wait. You just wait." See, they took him in my office, so pastor study over there, and they took the people that got saved for the whole month, and they put them in the pastor study, and they could have put them in the washroom. But anyway, they put them in the pastor study. And they questioned them, and they had to be approved with this committee and had to wait and prove themselves before they could get baptized and be members of the church. And yet the book of Acts says in Acts 2:41, the Lord added daily such as were being saved, and says were added unto them about 3,000 souls, and said they're added to the church daily such as were being saved. Folks were joining the church every day back in the book of Acts. Now, Baptists always believed that until this century. Now, in Baptist churches, in this century, all over this country, you have people who have waiting periods, nothing more than a second-class catechism. Now, we didn't do that until this century. Now, no Baptist had any of these things. I'll go through them. Universal church, formal services, robes, worship centers, building as the house of God, term sanctuary, anthems and classical music, ornate buildings, clergy titles, union of church and state, catechism, waiting period for baptism. Those things were unheard of until this century. Now what happened? Let me show you. Let me have three men, you three fellows right here, stand right there. I want you to sit down. right? These men represent the Catholic Church back 20 years ago. One on this side is El Papa. And so, all right, now follow me carefully. There was a Reformation. And from the Catholic Church, there came out the Protestants. So you to the other side, you come on out there. Down those steps. One more. All right. Now we have the Protestants. I'm talking about Martin Luther and Zwingli, and then like that, we have the Reformers. We have the Protestant denominations. Now, they left the Catholic Church. Over what? Basically, over the just living by faith, but the other things also. But basically, it was a doctrinal withdrawal. But these people are this is the mother of harlots, and these are the children. The mother gave birth to children, but even she labored too to give birth to these kids, and she gave birth to these kids. Now wait a minute. All the time over here, stand away, brother Ray. All the time, there were Baptist churches, and Brother Ray is going to represent those Baptist churches. All right. Now then, when the Reformation came out, step down these steps. You still have the Baptist churches. Still had them. There always has been, since Jesus established the church, not on Pentecost, not in the book of Acts, but during his own personal ministry, there's always been New Testament Baptist churches. Now, while over here you're having the Catholic Church, and over here you have the New Testament churches, let's go back to it again. Get back up here. All right? Originally, you had the Baptist churches and the Catholic Church. All right? Then, as time passed, you still have Baptist churches, but Reformation calls there to be Protestant groups. All right? Now then, you still have the same thing. No change over here. And by the way, over here, these fellows over here admired these folks over here. I admire today the fellows who are fighting for the Bible in the Southern Baptist Convention. But I'm not a Southern Baptist. I could not be a Southern Baptist. No way I could be a Southern Baptist, because they wouldn't have me. I'm not going to go back to take back what they said. And they said, get out. And so, so they're going to take it back, or I won't go back. But, all right. But is anything wrong with these folks over here, admiring the courage over here? Does that mean you got to join them? No, because this fellow over here is baptizing by immersion. These folks here, they're children of the mother of harlots, and so the children look a lot like the mother. Both together look a lot like the mother. So what happens? This fellow over here, he's preaching salvation by grace through faith. He's preaching salvation by grace through faith, but he's baptizing folks by immersion, and they're sprinkling folks. He has an independent church, and he reorganizes in the denominations. It's just powerful over their people as the Catholic Church used to be. What they've done is pulled out of doctrinally, but organizationally, Mr. Calvin and Mr. Luther were just as powerful over their denominations as El Papa was over the Catholic Church. So, as time, again, let me say this. I admire Luther. I admire Zwingli. I admire Calvin. But none of them ever belonged to a New Testament church, because New Testament churches didn't baptize or sprinkle babies. And New Testament churches didn't have denominational bosses. And so none of them belong to the New Testament church. But I admire them. Thank God it's better than up here while I go, isn't it? So admire them. All right, but something else happened. With the passing of the centuries, there came a deadening and a liberalizing of these denominations. So, from these denominations, they're pulled out people, and I call it the 20th century Reformation. the American Reformation.
So, Brother Moffat, you go down 3 steps. So now then, he pulled out of the Protestant group. You follow me? All right. They all were Catholics originally. Is that right? All right. So now, Brother Jeff is what to this Catholic Church? What? A child. This is a mother. What do mothers have to have? Wonderful. You caught it just like that. And, all right, so he's the child. Is that right? He can't be a mother of harlots if he's going to have little harlots. So what is he? I said it. I didn't. Okay. Now, does that mean he's all bad? No, it means his mama is the whore and he's the little harlot. All right. Now then, what is he to the mother of harlots?
The grandchild.
Yeah, the grandchild. Does that mean he's all bad?
No.
All right. So here, step back up here again, fellas. We'll go through it again. You follow as they move. You move. All right. We have here. We have what? Talk to me. Here we have what? Catholic Church. Catholic Church. All right. And then in the 16th century, we had a what? Reformation. And who pulled out? Not individuals, but called what? Protestants. Okay, Protestants, you pulled out. All right? But they still look like the mother. But did you know that grandchildren also favor the grandmothers? Now, they don't favor them as much as the children do. But sometimes you can tell a grandchild, grandfather, grandmother, they still favor some. But you still got this baby Baptist churches over here, preaching the truth, baptizing folks, obeying the Great Commission, observing the Lord's Supper, not believing in sacraments, and having the priesthood of the believer, and New Testament churches with pastors and deacons and so forth. And but the Protestants got also formal, and not formal, but they got liberal. And so what happened? The non-denominational people pulled out. Now, the non-denominational, I admire them. Thank God they did. Thank God the non-denominational people pulled out the Presbyterian liberal denomination. Thank God they pulled out of liberal Methodism. Thank God Philip pulled out the Episcopalian liberalism. Thank God. But they're still not New Testament churches. Here you get New Testament churches over here. Now, should we admire them? Of course we should. Should we address them as brothers and sisters in Christ? Of course we should. Should we criticize them? Of course we should. No, we should not. And no, we should not criticize them. But does that mean we can't be thankful we're still Baptist? Can't you be friendly to the neighbor next door but be thankful that you have your own family? In order to be proud of your own family, you have to hate the folks next door? Or do you have to love the folks next door or be proud of your family? Or do you have to invite the folks next door to come and live with you in order to be proud of your family? No, sir. Be proud of your family, but and be glad you don't belong to those cuts, those people next door. And but be glad about that. Don't be ugly to them. Don't be unkind to them. But thank God for your family name and family heritage. All right? Now follow me carefully. I'm going to show you something. Don't you go on down to the bottom. Now, how you feel about this, Baptist pastor, about this, what's going on over here? Huh? You admire him. And you think he's saved? That's good. And you'd even pray for him, wouldn't you? Or if you saw him out of gas on the highway, what would you do? Stop buying some gas. Well, wonderful. So, you're mad at him, I say. But, won't you go join him? Why? You're a Baptist. You proud you're a Baptist? All right. That's good. Now, I want you to notice something about this fellow here. I'm going to get down to some real nitty-gritty right now. You've been wanting me to all the way through, haven't you? Okay, here we go. They came, this non-denominational crowd. Listen. Bob Jones Sr. was a Methodist. Dr. Coverson was a Episcopalian. Billy Sunday was a Congregationalist. I think he was. No, I knew he was. Great men, far greater men than I. But they didn't belong to as great of churches as I do. See? Now, the truth is, this
crowd here came toward us, but they did not come to us. Now, would you take him? In what condition would you take him? He'd have to get saved. He'd already saved. He'd have to get baptized and become a Baptist. I see. Now, but you'll still like him, won't you? You still think he's saved, don't you? I don't mean the particular fellow. I mean what he represents. All right. You think he's saved. Okay. And you're not mad at him, are you? You're going to throw rocks at him, criticize him. But he's still not a Baptist. And it's a matter of good, better, best. See? Good, better, best. Putrid. I don't care if you like it or not. I'm going to preach the truth. All right? Now, whatever happened to Baptists being proud of our Baptist heritage? Well, here's what happened. Now, follow me carefully. Baptist people decided they wanted to be educated. The independent Baptists had no schools. This is your son right here. No, better still, I'll let you. So what happened? We went over here. Got educated in his school. He trained our preachers. What did he do when he trained our preachers? That's okay, Roy. What did he do when he trained our preachers? Well, he may have had a church service for Methodists and Baptists somewhere else and Presbyterian somewhere else. Now, I admire the fellow, but it's stupid for him to let him train his preachers. So what happened? He comes back over here. What's he learned? Universal church, formal services, robes, worship centers, building is the house of God, anthems and classical music, ornate buildings, clergy titles, union of church and state, catechisms. What did he learn over here? Where did it come from? Not there. Don't get mad at me, just disprove it. This crowd right here was a phenomenon of the turn of the century. Don't leave me now. They built schools all across this nation. The Bible Institute craze covered this nation. They built schools like Bible Institute of Los Angeles, Biola. I'm not against Biola. Please listen to me now. I'm not fighting Biola. I couldn't go there. I preached on Founders Week out there years ago. I'd never go back. Because it's not what they used to be. But Biola used to be a good school, but not a Baptist school. And a good school for him to train his own people, but not a good school for us to train Baptist people. Biola, Philadelphia School of the Bible, Moody Bible Institute, Columbia College in Columbia, South Carolina, Appalachian Bible Institute, back in West Virginia, Dallas Theological Seminary, Florida Bible College, Dallas Bible College, and all across this country. The Bible Institute craze went wild. But we had no place. Independent Baptists had no place. Until J. Frank Norris started the school in Arlington, Texas, and later on, the Baptist Bible Fellowship started the school in Springfield, Missouri. Independent Baptists have no place to train the preachers. But these folks over here built a lot of schools. Now, I'm not opposed to their schools any more than I'm opposed to a barber college. But a barber college is not a good place for a Baptist preacher to train. I'm not opposed to medical school. But a medical school is not a good place for a Baptist preacher to train. I'm not opposed to these good Bible colleges they built, but they taught a lot of truth, but they came out of here and left some error, and came out of here and left some error, but they still had some things that they got here. They did not disrobe. I didn't put that right real well, did I? Truth is, they just about have disrobed now. They did not come out of the universal church they got from Mama here. They did not come out from their former worship services. All the time, Baptists were over here praising God and preaching the gospel and getting people saved and telling them to behave themselves and live right. But we see, that was our heritage. We had no mama. We had a Savior. And He started the churches. And so we kept on. So, we must admire them, but we had no colleges. So two things happened. On the carefully. Two things happened. This is your preacher boy right here. We sent our preacher boy over here to get trained. Now they got some good training. They got trained to preach salvation by grace through faith. They got trained that the Bible is the Word of God. They got trained that Jesus was the Son of God. They got good Christian training, but they did not get good church training. What's the most important, the church, Christianity or the church? You can't divide the two. If the church weren't important, Jesus wouldn't have started it. So they got good training. They got training that the blood of Jesus washes away our sins. They got training in walking with God. They got training in prayer. They got training in the doctrine of the Holy Spirit, in some cases mixed up. But they got no training concerning the New Testament church. They got no training concerning the ordinances of the New Testament church. In fact, the Youth for Christ came from this group right here, and they have the Lord's Supper at their annual convention. They call it that, but it's not that. It's fake. Because only the local church can have the Lord's Supper. But there's a second thing that happened. Okay, he trained him, sent him back over here. Now then, what do you believe about the universal church, son? You just graduated from this college, stupid. What do you believe about it now? Believe in it? Yes, okay. What do you believe about us having this kind of Bible study in church? You believe in this kind of stuff? This beauty stuff? You like it what? More what? More formal. Yeah. What do you believe about worship centers now? You like them? Yeah. And what do you believe about your old pastor here? He uses pretty bad grammar, doesn't he? He's sort of crude, isn't he? Because you've been over here and gotten educated, haven't you? And you've learned some things about him that was bad. You also learned some things about him that he still does, didn't you? But there's something else. This guy, not only we send our preacher boys over here to get trained, and they send them back, not bad fellows, still preach the gospel, but did not believe in our Baptist heritage. All right, here's a preacher boy right here. One of you idiots, get up, would you please? The idiot is the one that got up, all right? Not only did we send our preacher boys over here, by default, we had no place to send them. But they got their boys, trained them, and sent them to our Baptist churches to pastor our Baptist churches. There are hundreds of pastors of Baptist churches today who are not Baptists. So, we our Baptist heritage has been diluted. Now again, we must admire them. And it's partially our fault. We had no college. So they brought back, he brought over the above things. What do you believe about the universal church? You believe in it. What do you believe about type services to have? Formal services. What do you think about the worship centers? What do you think this building is right here? Sanctuary. You're pretty sharp. And in fact, you look sort of sincere in all this stuff you're saying. Let me ask you a question. Were you a student at Howells Anderson College? When do you think first of all get baptized? Well, when? You think all baptized, they get saved? I say. Listen, I have been to the islands of the sea. That sounds good, doesn't it? Islands of the sea. Truth is, one of the islands just off North Carolina was out there one time, wading in the ocean. But I have found in Jamaica, I have found in the Bahamas, I have found all about in Puerto Rico. I found preachers that were Baptist preachers, saved in Baptist churches on those islands, sent to the United States to study over here, go back home with his some of his practice that he got from the other harlots, and pastor Baptist churches, but not doing, practicing what Baptist churches have historically practiced. But now then something's happened. A phenomenon has happened in our generation. Just as at the turn of the century, there was a great phenomenon of Bible institutes, and again, I'm not criticizing them. I'm saying good, better, best, putrid, right. All right? I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying that's better. You see? In our generation, an amazing thing has happened. Number one, our own Christian schools and Baptist churches. 30 years ago, you couldn't find a Baptist church that had a Christian day school. Now then, it's hard to find one that doesn't. There are thousands of Baptist churches operating Christian day schools like ours across America. That isn't all. Yesterday, I was talking to a bunch of preachers. Sitting right over here was a preacher that had started a small Baptist college. Sitting right over here was a preacher that started a small Baptist college. And you've got Baptist colleges starting all over America. No longer do we have to send our boys to the good. We can now send them to the best. You see? And they can be taught that there's no such thing as the invisible universal church. And they can be taught that no such need for us to dress our choirs and our preachers like Catholics do. Now, I'm not mad at anybody that has a rogue choir, but they didn't get it from our Baptist history. And I dare anybody to prove they did. They got it from there. By way of there and there. And with this idiot right here that sent this guy over to school. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You are. Good. Now, are we supposed to hate them? No. Love them? Yes. Pray for them? Sure. Thank God for them? Sure. I suggested there are two other colleges represented, two fellows at colleges represented. They were sitting right in front of me while I was answering questions. I was talking about some of, not this, but along this line, things you've heard on Wednesday night in recent weeks and months. And those 2 men sat there and shook their head on everything I said, up and down. Up and down. Now, does that mean that we got there and we said we're gonna TP his college? No, we may burn it. No, we're not gonna do that. We're gonna thank God for the truth he teaches. But we're still Baptist. I like the story about that Baptist person who went to the Catholic hospital. He was near, the nurse said, if you get feeling bad now, there's a little idol up here, Virgin Mary or something. You rub it, it'll make you feel better. By 2 o'clock in the morning, a pain hit this guy, and he thought he was dying. He looked at that doll, and he said, can't do it, I'm a Baptist. By 3 o'clock in the morning, a pain hit him, and it was worse than the other. He thought, sure, he was about to die. He reached up, and I said, I can't do it, I'm a Baptist. By 4 o'clock in the morning, death was inevitable. He reached up, he grabbed that doll and began to rub it, and said, Lord, don't let this crazy doll fool you, I'm still a Baptist. I thank God for him, but I'm still a Baptist. I thank God for the gospel he preaches, but I'm still a Baptist. And the thing America needs more than she needs anything else is a Baptist church in every neighborhood, a soul-winning, fundamental Baptist church in every neighborhood in America. That's what America needs. This is something else I want you to notice. You started your school now, don't you? You pastors can sit down. You preacher boys, you're pastoring Baptist churches now. So we started this school, haven't you? Okay. We're going to get some teachers. Haven't had any college, have you? You got any Baptist people that have their degrees that can teach in your college?
No. That's what happens.
He gets a teacher out from this, over here.
Yeah.
And he sends him over here. So now who's teaching the Baptist college? Somebody asked me yesterday a question and answer session about a certain college. I said, name me a Baptist college in America that was not a fundamental independent Baptist college that was not started by a local church. Divine perpetuity has been promised to the churches, I taught you before, not to the school. So a church that starts a school can live without dying. A school that started itself without the canopy, umbrella of a church over it, it has to die. But this guy called off a college that calls itself a Baptist college and said, how about that one? And I said, they call themselves a Baptist college, but I said, every teacher they got came from over here. Where did our Howells Anderson College teachers come from? Most of them came from Howells Anderson College. Yeah. Yeah. So, don't you see what's happened? We have allowed ourselves, nothing wrong with you, fella. You're a good guy. You just have to be born with the wrong crowd up here. Had the wrong grandmama and the wrong mama. But you're good. I thank God for you. And I'll fellowship with you. But I still don't let that guy there fool you. You're still a Baptist, you see. So what happened is, now we have schools with our own and of our own. And because of that, you watch the next 10 years. You watch the next 10 years. We don't have to send our students over here anymore, so the fact that we don't have to means that over here they won't have the students because they haven't got the service informal enough to get a bunch of guys called to preach, all the guys called to preach over here. And most of the students he had came over here because all the action's over here. All the soul winning's over here. All the red hot evangelism's over here. Consequently, we did not realize it, but we were being influenced all the time by the Catholic Church. Because from her came some harlots, and those harlots came people of conviction. Thank God for them. Thank God for them. But though they came toward us, they did not come to us. And though we can thank God for them, we still must thank God that there is a better than their good. And that is the doctrine of local New Testament independent Baptist churches who start their own schools, run their own business, are bossed by nobody but God himself. Shall we stand, please?